from Genesis. That night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon.
Good morning. It's really lovely to be back and to see some of your faces that I have met before and to meet with the rest of you and to be in the beautiful new sanctuary that I know you persevered to get, and it is so beautiful. I'm also grateful to my dear friend and colleague Leah for the invitation. And as Leah mentioned before, my partner in life and ministry, Karen, is not able to be here this morning, and she so wanted to be. She sends her good wishes, and she would very much like to come another time to meet you all. Unfortunately, it turns out that the angels who come in the night to wrestle with us don't always do so on your schedule, and so she's at home trying to wrestle a blessing out of the particular set of circumstances in our own life. So all of this is to say that this topic is personally on point for me, so at least one person in the sanctuary is going to hear a sermon that they need to hear. So let's talk a little bit about our friend Jacob this morning. My guess is that all of you have been diligently studying your Hebrew scriptures recently. Yes, I know that about you. How many of you are familiar with the story of Jacob and the angel? Okay, some people. So for those of you who might want the Cliff Notes version, the book of Genesis is the book of how the Israelites, the Jewish people, come to be as a people. And Jacob is the third in the line of the patriarchs. His father is Isaac. His grandfather is Abraham. You may have heard some stories about sacrifices and mountaintops and those sorts of things. Jacob is the third in that line. And he's a twin. So his brother Esau and him have literally fought with each other since they were in the womb. Jacob is the younger of the two twins, and he is crafty and constantly trying to steal the stuff that is not his. So he tricks Abraham into giving the blessing that's supposed to be for Esau. He eventually has to flee from his homeland. And when we come into this story, he's been gone from home for 20 years. He knows he's going back. He's going to meet Esau, and their stuff's going to go down, y'all. And so he's preparing in his tricky way. And so he divides his wives and his stuff and his animals into two groups, and he sends one way and one the other, hoping that at least one of the groups will survive. And he's alone, which you can imagine for a twin is something very rare in that life. And so it's on the banks of the river when we hear so abruptly in this story, Jacob was left alone and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. For the thousands of years since this story was written, this particular line has caused a million questions. Who is this man? Is he a man at all? Is he an angel? Is he Jacob's other shadow side? Is it God God's self who's wrestling with him. Where does he come from? Why does he choose Jacob? And why now? As a reader, though, I think it's actually more engaging because we don't have all the information. Because what that does for us as we're reading it is it feels like somebody's coming up behind us, and before we know what's happening, we are down in the dust with Jacob before we have all the information. As with all of the stories in the Bible, this one is metaphor. And this one evokes for me a memory of a friend who was caught off guard when her doctors informed her at the age of 32 that she had aggressive cancer. Reminds me of an acquaintance who suddenly lost her job and her marriage fell apart in the same week as she found out she was pregnant with twins. We've all had some moment in our lives when we felt besieged, tackled so quickly that before we can make sense of anything, we're already rolling around in the dust in this death match with something that is so close to us that we can't actually see its face. And then other times, the figure who comes to wrestle with us isn't a stranger at all. We've wrestled him before. It's addiction, abuse, the daily grind of sexism or racism or transphobia or capitalism that are always ready to step on our throats just when we least expect them. But the thing is, when you've got sand in your eyes and dirt in your nostrils and a set of arms locked around your chest so hard that you can't breathe, it doesn't matter who's squeezing the air out of your lungs, what their motivation is, whether you deserve it, where they came from. What matters is how you're going to take your next breath. How to survive the initial shock of the first blow. And then once you're in the fight, how you're going to sustain yourself and defend and punch back in equal measure. The truth is, when you are writhing under the weight of a knee between your shoulder blades, you don't have time to look up and psychoanalyze the person pushing your face into the gravel. You just need a way to throw them off your back.
This reading is from The Man Watching. It's by Rainer Maria Rilke. When we win, it's with small things, and the triumph itself makes us small. What is extraordinary and eternal does not want to be bent by us. I mean the angel who appeared to the wrestlers of the Old Testament. When the wrestler's sinews grew long like metal strings, he felt them under his fingers like chords of deep music. Whoever was beaten by this angel, who often simply declined the fight, went away proud and strengthened and great from that harsh hand that kneaded him as if to change his shape. Winning does not tempt that man. This is how he grows, by being defeated decisively by constantly greater beings.
There are a lot of strands of biblical interpretation that will tell you that the story of Jacob is all about God sending us suffering to test us. This is the kind of interpretation that leads to what I like to call bad hospital theology. It's the kind that I heard in 100 conversations in ERs and ICUs when a family would be there having just gotten a cancer diagnosis or a loved one having a stroke or being in a car crash, and somebody would say, God won't give you more than you can handle. Or, everything happens for a reason. This is all part of a divine plan that you just don't understand yet. Bad hospital theology assumes that, number one, suffering is sent to us by fate or destiny or God or the universe, some sort of cosmic actor. And that suffering is redemptive in and of itself. Bad hospital theology says that actually maybe we should even be grateful for suffering because it is a gift from God that allows us to really prove ourselves. I call BS. Now I want to say I am a theist because I believe that there is something sacred of which I am a part that is both deeply inside of me and that radically transcends me. I'm a humanist because I care more about what we do with what happens to us than about why it happens. And I'm a Unitarian Universalist because there's space for both of those identities in our tradition. So as a Unitarian Universalist humanist theist to all the ists, I flat out reject bad hospital theology. And instead, I go to our tradition's wisdom when it comes to suffering and struggle. I draw on the ancient Universalist belief that we were all born from and we abide in love that is so powerful that no matter what we do or who we are, it will not let us go. And I draw from the Unitarian belief that all of us are born with immeasurable worth and dignity, and that none of us are predestined for punishment or suffering. As they like to say, quippily in seminary, it was the Universalists who thought that God was too good to condemn us, and the Universalists who thought we were too good to be condemned. That one? Mm-hmm. I believe it. I believe, like so many of you, so many of our religious ancestors, that this interconnected universe in its heart yearns for justice and holy healing. And that we as humans are empowered with free will and agency to create wholeness and healing and justice in our own lives, in our communities, and within the structures that shape our lives. I'm gonna say it straight up. Struggling and suffering are not gifts. Nor are they punishments. They are not to be revered and glorified. They don't have a divine purpose, and it is perfectly acceptable to rage against them when they have us in their vice grip. And yet, and this is the great theological paradox, even though struggle and suffering are not inherently meaningful or redemptive, we can sometimes wrestle from them great meaning and redemption. Sometimes, like Jacob, we can muster the white-hot clarity and focus to grab that thing that has us in its bone-crushing grasp and look at it, the addiction, the trauma, the abuse, the loss, the disaster, the oppression, and we can look it in the eyes and say, I don't know why you chose me. Maybe you thought I would go down easy, and maybe I did too. I don't know where you came from or why you're here, but now we are in this struggle together, and after all this time, both of us bruised and dirty and battered and stubborn, I have given you too much of myself to not take something in return. You may have started this struggle between us, but you are not going to be the one to end it. You will not get the final word. I may carry your scars with me from this place, but I will carry your blessing too. I will not let you go until you bless me.
This final reading is called The Healing Time by Pesha Gertler. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life. All the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, those coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again where I find them. The old wounds, the old misdirections, and I lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy.
My Aunt Linda and Uncle Bob were 23 years old when the car that they were driving went off the side of a mountain in Mexico while they were on their honeymoon. Linda's C4 vertebra was fractured, and her spinal cord was so badly damaged that she became a quadriplegic. In those first few weeks, as she was struggling to stay alive, they were stuck in Mexico because commercial airlines wouldn't transport people with disabilities. And finally, they were able to figure out a way to get a U.S. Army plane to bring her back. She spent 2 years at the Sister Kenny Institute in Minneapolis, at first just trying to survive and then learning how to live again, utterly dependent on a wheelchair and other humans to do the things that she had taken for granted. Linda lost almost everything that she had held precious. Her dreams of becoming an art teacher, her physical independence, eventually her marriage. Depression put a stranglehold on her after a while, and it was so bad that the doctors thought that she was delusional when she started complaining about a ringing in her ears after they gave her a new medicine to take care of the kidney infections that kept coming back, and it wasn't until she had finally lost all of her hearing permanently that they finally believed her. Linda's dark night of wrestling with the strange visitors of grief and rage and trauma and depression lasted for years. And it would be a neat, nicely wrapped up package if I were able to tell you that one day something just clicked and she was able to decide to claim her blessing from the suffering that gripped her life. It'd be nice if I could do it in 9 verses like Jacob does in the Hebrew Bible, but you all know that life is much more complicated than that. Of course, there were blessings in her life. She found a whole new circle of beloved friends through rehab and then in the disabled community. She learned to paint and draw again using her frozen hands, and she loved to share her art with people and delight in its beauty. She badgered the wilderness tripping company that brought disabled people into the wilderness into taking her along, even though they didn't want to, and she proved to them that she could do it by making them tip her out of a canoe and emerging, spluttering in her life jacket and saying, "I told you so." And yet she never abandoned her rage or her grief and her depression. She never forgave the circumstances of her life that had stripped her of so many of the things that she had hoped and dreamed. The story of Jacob and the angel is not one of decisive triumph. These two wrestlers are deadlocked and nobody is winning, and neither Jacob nor the stranger will let go. As the fight drags on, it becomes even more clear that neither is going to walk away unharmed. There will not be a winner. So what is the blessing that comes from struggle? From suffering and pain and trauma that leaves us, like Jacob, like my Aunt Linda, walking with a limp or not at all through the rest of our lives? The answer, I think, lies in the stranger's response when Jacob asks for his blessing. The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. "Who were you before?" the angel is asking. "How did you know yourself, the world?" And Jacob replies with the name that he was given at birth, the way that he has known himself, the name that has defined his existence until this liminal night. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome." The blessing that this man, this angel of tribulation, is able to bestow simply is a new name, a new way of summing up his identity, of representing himself, of being known to other people. The name Jacob, and our names, after all, are just shorthand for everything that we have become and seen and done and felt before. Jacob is now too small after what he has been through. But he has earned a new name, one that quite literally in its meaning holds both suffering and survival. In the nearly 30 years that my aunt Linda lived after her accident, she came to terms with the limitations in her life. She would have never said that she was glad for the trauma that she had experienced, but she did continually, fiercely, and unapologetically claim the blessings that she could from the life that she had. She had fierce friendships and tender lovers. She read and she drew and she traveled and she learned. She noticed things and had different experiences than she ever would have had in her old body, her old life. When I was a little kid and I would visit her, she offered me a more expansive view of the world from her public housing apartment and a more open heart from her broken body than anybody else I had ever met. Like Jacob, Linda was forever marked by her wounds, but she was also fiercely committed to being fully herself, to living in her new form and to wrestling a blessing from that life that was hers to live. The blessing that comes from struggle maybe is simply to discover our own true name, to find out who we are deep within ourselves when all the posturing, the self-aggrandizing, the pride is stripped away from us. When we have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. All of us will encounter a stranger in the dark sooner or later. We will be wrestled to the ground and pushed to the very limits of our strength and our endurance. We will throw our share of punches in return. But if we're lucky, if we can hold at arm's length whatever it is, the trauma, the abuse, if we can hold it at arm's length long enough to look it in its face, maybe we can learn to breathe differently. To acknowledge how we're hurt, of course, but to also refuse to be defeated by those wounds. Refuse to accept that struggle will be the end of our stories. And then to find the courage to let go of who we have been, leaning instead into our own new, true name. A truer embodiment of the fullness of our experience, both the bitter and the sweet. That place, my friends, may you be blessed. May it be so. Blessed be Ashe and Amen.